Welcome back, everybody. It's Dr. Colby Taylor, host of the Abnormal Psychologist podcast. I'm a psychologist. I'm an associate professor of behavioral sciences at Christian Brothers University in Memphis, Tennessee, and I host this podcast. I'm also a dad. I think I mentioned that on just about every episode. So we're at summer break right now, and my daughter Emerson, my four-year-old daughter Emerson, she had her birthday probably since I published the last episode. She calls this Dada Daycare in the summer because a couple of days a week, I keep her and her now two-year-old brother, Rowan, and today we went to the zoo. They're down for a nap right now, and I can actually publish an episode during nap time. And I've been thinking about grit a lot lately. I want to instill grit into my kids. Who doesn't want their kids to be gritty? And I was trying to figure out what I was going to do for this next episode, and I mentioned, I think in my last episode, we got some pet chickens for the kids. Pet chickens, I don't know, they're chickens that live outside in a coop and they lay eggs or will lay eggs this fall. They're not egg layers yet because they're too young. Anyways, we give them something called chicken grit. I think it's like mixed up stones or whatever they need for rocks, whatever they need for digestion. And grit has been sort of everywhere in the past few weeks for me. You could maybe call it a delusion of reference. So we have this package of chicken grit. So I see grit looking me in the face when I go outside and feed the chickens. I'm also reading, or just got done reading, a book called Grit. You might have heard of it. It was a bestseller by Angela Duckworth, who I'll talk about in a little bit. The full name of the book is Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. I live in Memphis, and Memphis is the home of the Memphis Grizzlies. And the Memphis Grizzlies motto is grit and grind. Memphis is a very gritty city. So grit has just been everywhere. And I thought, why not do an episode on grit? And this is sort of a book review of Angela Duckworth's Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. It's interesting to see perseverance there. And me as a psychologist, sometimes I want to say perseverance, which is a bad thing. We think about perseverance as a good thing and perseverance as a bad thing. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, today's episode is going to be on grit. It's usually traditional in psychology and in any science to define your key terms up front. So we should probably define grit. And in laying down the definition of grit, we should talk about Angela Duckworth because she is sort of the name associated with grit. Angela Duckworth is a rock star in the field of psychology. She's a professor at University of Pennsylvania, so she's been at UPenn for a while. And I'll talk about sort of her professional and academic journey as we go through this episode. And again, she's the author of Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance, which this is sort of a book review episode. So you can go to angeladuckworth.com. She's got her own website, and she has a frequently asked questions portion of this website. And the first frequently asked question is, what is grit? And per Angela Duckworth, grit is passion and perseverance for long-term goals. One way to think about grit is to consider what grit isn't. And it's always sort of interesting and a little bit troubling to me when we define a key term by defining it in terms of a negative, like what it isn't. Sometimes that means we have a hazy definition. Grit isn't talent. Grit isn't luck. Grit isn't how intensely for the moment you want something. This is all, again, from Angela Duckworth's website. Instead, grit is about having what some researchers call an ultimate concern, a goal you care about so much that it organizes and gives meaning to almost everything you do. She talks about this a lot in her book. And grit is holding steadfast to that goal even when you fall down, even when you screw up, even when progress toward that goal is halting or slow. Talent and luck matter to success, but talent and luck are no guarantee of grit. And in the very long run, I think grit may matter as much, at least as much, if not more. So we're going to unpack that definition, which again is wholesale from angeladuckworth.com, in this episode. And I'll give some critiques of the definition, as well as some things that I really like about it. So let's talk about grit. I guess one criticism I have here is that grit has been around for a while, though a term grit and sort of grittiness has been around far before Angela Duckworth. So I don't know that technically, even though she's sort of become synonymous with grit, we should let her wholesale define the concept of grit. It's been around long before her. I read years ago the book True Grit, which came out decades ago by Charles Portis. And the interesting thing about True Grit, which is sort of a Western novel, I think it takes place in Fort Smith, Arkansas. The interesting thing about True Grit is it ends in Memphis, Tennessee. at the very end of the book. John Wayne starred as Rooster Cogburn in sort of the True Grit movie. I think it was probably back in the 60s. And then more recently, like 10 years ago, the Coen brothers remade True Grit. So grit has been around for a long time. And I'm not so sure that Angela Duckworth gets to, you know, make the definition of what grit is and what grit isn't. Another sort of criticism I have about a definition of grit is we have a very similar term in resilience. And I think one thing that I struggled with in reading Angela Duckworth's book is separating out grit from resilience. Certainly people would probably, or Angela Duckworth would probably say resilience is a very important component of grit. That grit is sort of a superordinate term and resilience is an important part of grit. So grit would be larger than resilience. Resilience would probably more specifically be how you bounce back against or bounce back from some sort of setback. And that grit is more long-term. You heard long-term in her definition a little bit ago. And resilience is maybe just, you know, how well you rebound from some sort of setback. But that begs the question to me, or at least begged the question when I was reading the book, can you have grit in the absence of adversity? It seems like resilience is always in response to adversity, but I can't imagine you being gritty in the absence of adversity. And it sort of reminded me, I'm going to bring up a lot of literary references here. I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. And in Game of Thrones, there's this concept of the Knights of Summer. And the Knights of Summer are great. They're imposing before battle, right? They're sort of all bark and no bite, or at least they can bite when the tide is on their side. But when the going gets tough, they kind of wilt away. George R. R. Martin says, because they are the Knights of Summer and winter is coming, basically, they shirk once the going gets tough, once there's winter. It reminds me sort of of fair weather fans in sports, right? Fair weather fans, bandwagon fans, they all want to be on the bandwagon when your team is winning. They show up when the weather is 70 degrees Fahrenheit outside and sunny, but they're not there in a blizzard. They're not there in a losing streak, right? They're the first ones off of the bandwagon. And so I see a big parallel between resilience and grit, and I don't know that Angela Duckworth does a great job distinguishing between resilience and grit. Because I'm not sold that you can have grit in the absence of adversity, or at least that we would be able to measure your grit in the absence of adversity. Speaking of measuring grit, you can go to Angela Duckworth's website and you can, there's a tab for the grit scale, and it's only a 10-item scale, and it gives you a grit score from 0.0, which would be not gritty at all, to 5.0, which would be the grittiest of all people. And I took this grit scale, and it's interesting. Several of these 10 questions ask about how well you overcome setbacks and adversity. So again, can you have grit without adversity? I'm not sold that you can have grit without adversity. Anyways, again, on that 0 to 5 scale, I took this. My grit score is a 3.8. According to Angela Duckworth, this would be right about around the 50th percentile. So I'm just about average when it comes to grit, which brings up sort of another critique that I have about grit. Grit, to me, is heavily contextualized. So what do I mean by that? Well, everything in psychology is contextualized. I think that I am not very gritty when it comes to certain physical activities. Again, I mentioned I was at the zoo with my kids this morning. We did this race. It was a 4-miler called Zoom Through the Zoo a couple of weeks ago. I mentioned this in other episodes, but I like to run. And I was at like mile 3.5, and I'd probably gone out a little bit too fast, 3.5 out of 4 miles, only half a mile to go. I've got my Strava notification in my ear saying that I'm almost there. My pace is right where I want it to be. But my heart rate has been at about like 190 beats per minute for a solid 2 minutes. And I am starting to bonk. I'm starting to be in that red zone. And I can't keep up with it anymore. And I'm looking over to my right when I'm running. And there's this dad that's pushing his son in a wheelchair. And he's passing me. And then there is this older gentleman, probably in his 70s, and he looks at me and he's like, you can do it, you can do it. And the dad that was pushing his son in the wheelchair was saying, you can do it, keep up, we're almost there. And the son was saying, we're almost there, you can do it, you can do it. I had red zoned. I had to stop, I had to walk. They finished, you know, a minute or two in front of me. I felt in that moment that I didn't have very much grit. Speaking of running, one of the measures of grit that you could do, that's not an easy 10 question measure like I just gave to you on Angela Duckworth's website, is a treadmill test of grit. And this basically tries to test your physical limits and see how far, how you keep pushing, you know, how, when you hit that red zone, do you keep going? Some people give up a lot easier than others. I feel like in certain physical pursuits, I probably give up quicker than others would. Sometimes I'm amazed at reading stories about people that have been in like shipwrecks or plane crashes in the ocean, and they're treading water, waiting for rescuers to come. And they might have to tread water for like 12 hours or 15 hours or something crazy like that. And I was in my friend's swimming pool the other day, just sort of treading water, swimming with my kids. And I thought, you know, I might have 2 minutes in me of treading water, and then I'm just giving up. So I might not be very gritty when it comes to physical things. But contextualization is key, right? With everything with psychology. I think I'm very gritty when it comes to intellectual pursuits. I was gritty with my doctoral dissertation. You have to have grit to finish a doctorate. I've been very gritty. I don't know if I've mentioned this in any of my other episodes, but I love to work crossword puzzles. And I love sort of a challenge when it comes to crossword puzzles. I don't put them down easy. I don't give up on, but even if I'm reading a book and I don't really like it, I push through. I never don't finish reading a book with crossword puzzles again. Oh, I mentioned in a previous episode, I tried to do a trivia question every episode, and I think I've forgotten about that. Do you know what somebody that works crossword puzzles is called? No, it's not a nerd. They're called cruciverbalists. So I'm a cruciverbalist. So in certain pursuits, intellectual pursuits, I feel like I'm very, very gritty. Again, I think contextualization is key. I've seen people that have been extremely gritty in athletic realms. So I've taught, you know, Division I college athletes before. They're very gritty. They have ice water flowing through their veins when they're, you know, out on the basketball court or in a football field. I've talked combat veterans before that are so cool under live fire. You know, they talked to me about being under live fire before. But again, with contextualization, they might really struggle to give a presentation or a speech in class, right? So they could be extremely gritty in things that can make other people panic. But in other areas, right, they might not be that gritty at all, and they might give up easier. So I don't know that giving you a grit score, sort of like an IQ score, this is one number to rule them all, is really that appropriate. I think there's probably multiple grit scores. And Angela Duckworth does mention in her writing that there are subcomponents of grit. I don't even think that we've been able to fully identify all of the subcomponents of grit. So I'm not sold that you can sort of distill, condense grit into one score. I'm not sold that grit is completely different from resilience. I'm also not sure how perseverance fits in. I don't know that Angela Duckworth does a great job of arguing how grit is a separate concept from perseverance. Perseverance is certainly probably a contributing factor to grit, but to what extent there's overlap of grit and perseverance, I'm still a little bit confused. I also think we sort of do a mistake or make mistakes in thinking. I mentioned that I want to make my own kids gritty, but I don't think grit in itself is necessarily a positive thing or is always positive, right? Sometimes it's good to give up in the face of adversity. Sometimes it's good to sort of pivot, to do a 180 and to find something else that you're interested in. Which brings me to perseverance can also be pronounced perseverance. And in psychology and in, I think that some of the speech language providers I consult with use the term perseverance too. Perseverance can be doing something over and over and over again in the absence of like a really good reason, a really good reward. And I've heard before the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, which that's not the definition of insanity. I did an episode on insanity probably a dozen episodes ago or something like that. You can go back and listen to it. But we don't want people banging their head against the wall over and over and over again and expecting different results, expecting a breakthrough. Adaptability is good. And sometimes, honestly, it's a good idea to give up. So in Angela Duckworth's book, she mentions about when she was an undergrad, she was taking a science course for which she wasn't very prepared. She'd taken the AP version of this course or the AP prerequisite for this course in high school, and it didn't really prepare her for taking the next course in the sequence in college. And her advisor, her teaching assistant, after taking two exams in this course, urged her to drop the course. They said, you're going to fail this course. If you fail this next test, it's better to have a W on your transcript for withdrawal than to have an F. You need to withdraw from this course. And with her grit, she persevered and luckily passed that test and didn't have that stain of an F on her transcript. I think sometimes, though, you know, when I'm advising students, I carry an advising caseload with my undergrads of, you know, half dozen to a dozen undergrads. And sometimes it's a really good idea to drop a course. Sometimes it's a terrible idea to keep on doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So I'm not sold that grit in itself is always a positive thing. So I just mentioned a little bit about Angela Duckworth's background. She's a Harvard graduate. Her advisor in graduate school was Marty Seligman. And you might have heard that name Marty Seligman before in a couple of my episodes. I mentioned him in talking about depression and learned helplessness. And I also mentioned him in talking about positive psychology, an episode on positive psychology back in season 2, episode 22. So if you're a student of psychology, you might have heard that name Marty Seligman before in reference to shocking puppies. He did a very famous yoked design experiment with an electrified floor of shocking puppies to determine learned helplessness, which is very important to locus of control, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But again, what's sort of this idea of reference here? I had grit that was everywhere telling me to do this grit episode. But UPenn, University of Pennsylvania, is going to show up repeatedly in this episode. Angela Duckworth is currently a professor at University of Pennsylvania. Marty Seligman was at UPenn for a really long time. And one of his advisors and mentors was Aaron Beck, the founder of cognitive therapy. And he was also at UPenn. So we see this UPenn connection here. It's very interesting. I've talked about Aaron Beck before on previous episodes as sort of the father of cognitive therapy. Marty Seligman's research on learned helplessness was really important in one way that we understand depression. And Aaron Beck had sort of a conceptualization of depression, a cognitive conceptualization, where depression involves negative thoughts about self, world, and future. Okay, back to Angela Duckworth. Although she is an academic at UPenn, she hasn't always been an academic. And one of the things that I really appreciate about her journey is that she's always really wanted to help kids. That's sort of been her guidestone in her career. She's been a school teacher before she went to graduate school. She also worked for this think tank operation that focused on solving problems. You could pay them to consult and they would solve problems. So she's had life before and outside of academia, which I really like. And honestly, in reading Angela Duckworth's writings, especially this Grit, the Power of Passion and Perseverance, I think that we see eye to eye on almost everything related to psychology. So you probably will recognize her tone a lot in a lot of what I talk about in our podcast. So I think that we're on the same page as far as a lot of different things go. We're also both child focused, which I think is pretty cool. And speaking of children, one of the things she mentions in the book is that younger generations, children, adolescents, tend to be less gritty in her research than older generations. So older generations might be grittier. I'm going tomorrow to my grandmother's 102nd birthday party in Nashville. She's turning 102. And she was part of, you know, what's commonly referred to as the greatest generation. She was a World War II veteran. And were World War II veterans, and they weren't veterans at the time back in the 1940s, were they grittier? Is that, in fact, the greatest generation? And there's some research that supports that we are getting less gritty, we're getting less resilient as time goes on. Now, we don't know research-wise, since this research is relatively new, we don't have the longitudinal data so much to back up. Maybe when these people were in their 20s, they were the same amount gritty as 20-year-olds today. We'll need longitudinal research over several decades to, in fact, prove that younger generations are becoming less gritty. But there is some compelling evidence that younger generations are less gritty than older generations. So that's one thing she talks about in the book, is older generations might be grittier. We also know that as people age, we have what's called the maturity principle. So one of the classes I get to teach this fall is psychopersonality. And in personality, we discuss what's called the maturity principle. We also discuss this in sort of human development courses too. The maturity principle says that as we get older, certain desirable psychological personality traits get better. So we become more agreeable as we get older. We become more conscientious as we get older. And we become less neurotic as we get older. So you can think about maybe an older person being more laid back, more roll with the punches, more adaptable, less emotionally insecure or emotionally reactive than somebody that's like 16 or 17 that's super emotional and thinks it's the end of the world, you know, when something bad happens, that sort of thing. We become more staid as we get older. We call that the maturity principle. So maybe that's one of the explanations for older generations are grittier, is just cross-sectionally, everybody gets grittier as they get older, and it's not necessarily older generations. It's just you get grittier as you get older. Anyways, that also sort of relates to locus of control research, and locus of control is something that Angela Duckworth talks about a fair amount in her writing. I don't know that I've done an episode on locus of control before, but I have published a paper on locus of control back in, I think it was 2017, relating to like financial psychology. Locus of control dates back to the psychologist named Julian Rotter. Julian Rotter first explained the concept of locus of control, and he did years of research and found that people's actions are reinforced by internal cognitive processes and by external factors. That's not rocket science. That's essentially sort of cognitive behavioralism. Now, what's interesting, though, is the extent to which people attribute these actions to themselves, to their own sort of internal cognitive processes, their own drives, their own abilities, is termed an internal locus of control, whereas the extent to which people attribute these actions to external factors that are largely outside of their control is termed external locus of control. And in the United States, we haven't really found that men and women differ in relationship, in their locus of control. I think that Angela Duckworth mentions this in her writing, there's not significant like gender differences in grit. However, there have been certain cultural differences that have been found to exist in locus of control. There's some research that indicates that Asians tend to have more external locus of control than Americans. And the more contact Asians have with Americans, the more they become acculturated, the more locus of control shifts from being external to being more internal. Age differences also exist with locus of control. College students today have far more external locus of control than college students that lived 70 years ago. We found some relationships between locus of control and socioeconomic status as well. People that are of lower SES tend to endorse higher levels of external locus of control. They blame sort of their lack of economic success on external factors, whereas people of high SES tend to think that they got there by pulling themselves up by their own bootstraps and having sort of an internal locus of control. Individuals with internal locus of control exhibit higher levels of achievement motivation, and achievement motivation is a big component of grit. How goal-oriented are you? Achievement motivation means that you're driven to excel. You strive for improvement. You hold high standards for yourself. Part of achievement motivation might be academic. And if you have high achievement motivation, You might go on to get your PhD. You might get better grades in the classroom. You might be a better worker when you get out into the workforce. Internal locus of control in the workforce has been associated with having a higher income and more wealth. If you're external, you might attribute your actions to fate, luck, other people. You might be more likely to buy into horoscopes or seek psychic consultation. So there's a lot of stuff there with locus of control. And with grit, you tend to have higher internal locus of control. So locus of control definitely influenced Angela Duckworth's conceptualization of grit. I mentioned that Marty Seligman did his research on learned helplessness, which learned helplessness research originally focused on how you cope with physical aversive stimuli like electric shocks, and then evolved beyond animal subjects and, you know, physical electrical shocks to how people handle common setbacks, how people handle frustration. And learned helplessness develops when an individual doesn't accomplish a goal, and they lead to lower expectations about future performance, lower levels of motivation, feelings that actions are outside of one's control, and you become more likely to give up easier. Not surprisingly, people with high levels of learned helplessness tend to have higher levels of anxiety, depression, and phobias. Besides Marty Seligman, another psychologist that Angela Duckworth mentions in her writing is Carol Dweck. Carol Dweck is at Yale, and she's really big on mindset. Growth mindset versus fixed mindset, which is very much tied into locus of control. Also very much tied into nature versus nurture. So in teaching human development, a constant theme that comes up, which I hate, it's trite, and human development is whether things are caused by nature and nurture. And we know in psychology, things are both. It's just sort of to what extent nature and nurture work together. We know that there's certain things that tend to be more fixed, like your height. You don't have much control over your height. Whereas there's other things that are more apt to change, like your ability to play a musical instrument, which gets better with practice. So a prime example that Dweck uses in her research on whether your growth mindset or fixed mindset is how you conceptualize intelligence. There are some people that feel like intelligence is very fixed, that by the time that you're 5 years old, it's heavily genetic and there's not much changing what your IQ is. Your IQ tends to remain relatively constant throughout your life. And if you take sort of that mindset on intelligence, you sort of are fixed. And we have different fixed mindsets that apply to different psychological traits. Whereas people that have a growth mindset approach certain concepts like intelligence and feel like there's interventions you can do to change, that you can grow intelligence. So Carol Dweck's research comes up in relation to grit because grittier people tend to have more growth-minded mindsets. Growth-minded mindsets. They tend to be more growth mindset. I don't even know how you'd adjectively describe that, but they tend to be higher in growth mindset. You get what I mean. So we talked about learned helplessness. We've talked about locus of control. Another important psychological concept that comes up when we're talking about grit is optimism. People that are higher in grit tend to be more optimistic. And I mentioned this in my positive psychology episode, that there are two different types of optimism, really, when we're talking about psychology. The first type of optimism is dispositional optimism. So whether you just tend to be more optimistic or pessimistic, it's more of a state trait versus the second type of optimism that's attribution style. It's in response to something. And this isn't so much the attribution style, a character trait. It's more how we perceive events on a case-by-case basis. So if something good happens, an optimistic attribution style would say the event is internal. So you caused it. They have internal locus of control. It's stable and it's global. So for example, let's say you ace a test. You'd say you did this through your own hard work, through your own studying, through your own skill, through your own intelligence, which is internal. And if you had the chance to take that test over again, if you took form B of that test, you'd ace that test 100 times out of 100 times, which is stable. And you would also sort of pat yourself on the back and say that you're all around intelligent. Just because you aced a test in science doesn't mean that you're only good at science. It also means that you would be really good at English and you would be good at math and every school subject under the sun. You're a badass student as well, which is a global attribution. The optimistic attribution style for a negative event is the exact opposite. It's external, it's unstable, and it's specific. So let's say that you flunked your science test. You'd say it's external. Maybe you were just super tired, maybe you weren't feeling your best, and it wasn't really your fault that you failed that test. Maybe there were some unfair questions. You're externalizing why, you're coming up with excuses, essentially, why you didn't pass that test. And if you had to take that test again under different circumstances, with a good night's sleep under your belt, with fair questions and a fair teacher, you'd probably do better than you did this time that you flunked it. So it's unstable. And you'd say it's specific, meaning that, you know, this is just a singular science test. It doesn't mean that you suck at all of science. It just means that you did bad on one particular test. And it certainly doesn't relate to math or English or another school subject. So you make it specific. It doesn't reflect on your self-worth. And again, really good athletes, a lot of times are told to have short memories. And people that are gritty probably have short memories. They brush off defeats and they focus on the future. And that's another theme that comes up in Angela Duckworth's writing, is that people that are grittier tend to be more future mindset. They focus on the future more. Back to Duckworth's book, another thing that I really liked about her book is she had a really great section. I don't know that it was technically a chapter, but a section on parenting styles. And I did an episode 21 of season 3 on parenting styles. Duckworth talks about how if you're a child of authoritative parents, you tend to be grittier. So if you want to be gritty, have an authoritative parent. And one thing I really like about her explanation of different parenting styles is, you know, she talks about how authoritative parenting style, which is really good at being involved, high involvement, but also high warmth. Authoritative sounds really close to authoritarian parenting style, which is a negative parenting style, where you're highly involved, but you have low warmth, right? You're really strict, but you're not loving and caring. And so in her writing, instead of calling it authoritative parenting style, she refers to it as wise parenting. And so you don't have this conflation between authoritative parenting and authoritarian parenting, which I really like. And maybe in teaching future classes, I'll refer to the authoritative parenting style as wise parenting. I also like her alliterative description of wise authoritative parenting. She says authoritative parenting is defined by love, limits, and latitude. I love that. I might have to borrow that for my own teaching. So authoritative parenting, which I strive to be with my own kids. If I want to instill grit into them, I'll try to be authoritative. But again, I'm not sure that grit, I say I want to instill grit in them. I definitely don't want them to give up when the going gets tough. But I don't think that grit is always a great thing. You know, we hear this phrase, especially in Western society, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And, you know, I don't like that phrase so much because we have, you know, complex trauma. A complex trauma, I talk about this when we talk about PTSD. I did a PTSD episode, and I can do a separate episode on complex trauma. Complex trauma is trauma that's repetitive in nature. It's day in and day out. It's not necessarily a one and done horrific event. It's you're exposed to an abusive relationship. You're exposed to poverty or sort of a crime infested neighborhood. This wears you down day in and day out. And certainly it might not be killing you, but it's not necessarily making you stronger, right? We know with blunted cortisol response that it's actually weakening you. And so I don't necessarily like this, what kills you, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That grit is like the best thing to have. Certainly, I think gritty individuals fare better. So in my own clinical work, I mentioned Memphis is a very gritty city. We have really high rates of childhood poverty. We have really high rates of exposure to adverse childhood experiences, ACEs. And all too often we focus on risk factors, right? If you're exposed to, you know, ACEs, which are, we conceptualize as risk factors, your probability of having certain behavioral or emotional disorders is higher. And one of the really good things, one of the reasons I really like doing an episode on grit is a protective factor. And I see kids almost on a weekly basis that have all of the odds stacked against them. They have every risk factor under the sun. And a lot of times they defy odds and they succeed. And you wonder how they made it out of those awful situations, how they found success. Could we bottle that up somehow and give it to other kids? You know, what set them apart? And so I really like talking about grit in positive terms, but again, I don't think that necessarily grit is always positive. I think there could be some toxicity to grit. And I'm guilty of falling into this toxicity myself. Again, I mentioned I like running, and one of the things that got me into running was reading David Goggins, reading David Goggins' book, Can't Hurt Me, right? And sort of the premise of Can't Hurt Me is you need to suck it up, buttercup. You need to get stronger. David Goggins runs a marathon with like stress fractures in his legs and a heart condition. And like most of the reason that we fail is our failure mindset, and that we can always push a lot harder than we think we can. Great message, but what doesn't kill you doesn't always make you stronger. And again, sometimes it's a good idea to just give up. So I mentioned David Goggins, and I was thinking in making this episode about grit, like who are the grittiest people I can think of? David Goggins was one of them. Another was another literary reference, but I read the book Unbroken years ago by Laura Hildebrandt before it came out into a movie. And both the book and movie Unbroken discuss the life of Louis Zamperini. Incredible life story. Again, part of the greatest generation. He fought in World War II and probably one of the grittiest people I could think of. So we find stories of grit inspirational. Speaking of sort of the military connection with grit, I mentioned David Goggins. I mentioned Louis Zamperini. Angela Duckworth talks about in her writing West Point students. And so, or probably the technical term is cadets. So there's a certain amount of attrition in West Point. It's very selective to get into West Point. Certainly everybody that's selected or admitted into West Point, they have really high standards, right? You have to be recommended by a congressperson or the vice president of the United States, and you have to have stellar academic achievement. Like, they don't admit just about anybody, and certainly if they have given you the nod of admission, you probably have what it takes to make it in West Point. But we find that there's a lot of students that don't make it. There's a lot of attrition at West Point. And one of the things that separates the wheat from the chaff, is the Beast Barracks. Angela Duckworth talks about the Beast Barracks in West Point. It's psychologically and physically draining in the first, I believe it's the first year that you're at West Point. And there's a lot of students that certainly on paper, again, are sort of the summer soldiers of George R. R. Martin. They definitely have what it takes on paper to succeed, but somehow they drop out. Maybe they've never been faced with adversity before just because they've been so far and above. They've never really met a challenge in high school or before high school. And now they're actually meeting a challenge and they just sort of fold. They sort of give up. And so Angela Duckworth had been consulted to find, does grit determine or can grit determine who's going to make it at West Point and who won't make it? This is, again, going back to, can you be gritty without adversity? And I really don't think you can. I see this in advising college students and teaching college students. There's so many students that have done extremely well in high school and have never really met adversity. And they come to my office and they're having a breakdown because they made a B or a C on an assignment. And they think it's the end of the world. And I don't think that we do a very good job of teaching today's youth about how to deal with adversity. Things aren't always going to be Mickey Mouse Clubhouse roses, A pluses. A B isn't the end of the world. A C isn't the end of the world. Even an F isn't the end of the world. And we probably need to do a better job about teaching students how to deal with failure or with not always being top of the class. Anyways, my own opinion. I'll get off my soapbox. Another thing that Duckworth discusses in her writing, and I'm a big fan of this in my own clinical work, is suggesting extracurriculars to students, to kids. So we know that kids that participate in extracurriculars, and it doesn't even really matter what they do. It doesn't matter whether it's piano or cello or Model UN or Knowledge Bowl or Quiz Bowl, football, basketball, soccer, just doing something outside of school can make you grittier, especially if you do it for more than one season or more than one year. And there's, I recommend this to parents all the time in my clinical work, that it's really valuable to hear instructions from another adult that's not you, that's not a parent, so from a coach. It's really valuable to work with a team. So you're learning camaraderie, you're learning cooperation, teamwork. It's also really valuable to be able to experience setbacks. You're probably not going to win every game. You're going to get frustrated. You're not going to be the most athletic or smart kid on the debate team, on the field, whatever. And it's really good to experience sort of that frustration at times and to be able to deal with it. And so extracurriculars, especially participating in them for more than one season or more than one year, tends to be associated with higher grit. I've been discussing this with my wife, Lauren, a fair amount recently. She was talking about when she was growing up, she was always sort of a quitter. She did like ballet, she did soccer, she did cheerleading, and she never saw it through to the end of a season. She would always, you know, say, I don't want to do this, and her parents would let her quit. And she thought that was really valuable, right? Because she was able to feel out different hobbies or extracurriculars and find ones. Well, I don't know that she ever really found one that fit with her, but she was able to try a lot of different things. And she was telling me there's a lot of value in being able to try different things. And there's value sometimes in giving up. And my four-year-old Emerson has recently been doing some soccer. It's not competitive soccer or anything like that. And after this last season, or midway through this last season, I don't even know what they call a season because you're not playing games, but midway through this last whatever it is, Emerson didn't want to go anymore. And so we had this conversation about, should we let her not go? Are we forcing her to do something she doesn't really like to do? We came up with some compromises. She was able to go out on the field with her stuffed animal, which I don't even know how I really feel about that. And she said she didn't want to do soccer again until recently. And then like last week, she was like, I really want to do soccer again. So now I don't really know what to do. All right. But extracurricular is definitely valuable, and I'd recommend them to families. It's always good to get instruction from somebody that's not a parent. If you have any questions about grit, any comments, anything you disagree with me on in this episode, send me an email, ctaylo41@cbu.edu. This is loosely a book review, so if you have any books that you want me to review, give my opinion on, I'm happy to do that. Any episode ideas, also happy to do that. Send it with the subject line mailbag in the email. I do have a mailbag email today. It says, hi, I recently discovered your podcast and I've really enjoyed it. I have a friend who's been struggling recently with executive dysfunction. Notice you didn't have an episode on it. I'd be really interested to learn more about it. Thank you for the email. I definitely don't have an episode on executive dysfunction. And I think that my next episode, I was just talking with Lauren, my wife. It was uncanny timing with this email because we were talking about executive functioning a few nights ago. And so I'd love to do an episode on executive functioning. It's something that I teach on. It's something that I think is really important to know about. It could help a lot of children and adults knowing about what executive functioning is and their own executive functioning. So I'm going to move that ahead in the queue, and that's going to be the next episode. So until that next episode, which is going to be on executive function and executive dysfunction, take care and stay well and stay gritty. Or don't stay gritty. Sometimes it's better to just give up. Anyway, see you next time.